Thanks for joining us today with today's webinar. We're going to talk about turning threat intelligence into action. And we're specifically talking about CyberFire MDR, our MDR service. But actually, as usual, this is not a sales pitch. You can apply this with pretty much any kind of SOC service. Yeah, we'll keep it interesting. Before I introduce my colleague, just a bit of housekeeping. We are going to be having a Q&A. So for those of you that have joined our webinars before, there is a little question answer thing within Zoom that you can fire up, and you can ask your question either anonymously or with your name displayed. So please feel free to go through those questions or to add your questions in there. And as I mentioned, we'll get to those at the end of the webinar. And yeah, again, we are recording the session today. So if you want to make this available to your colleagues that aren't able to join, you can do that. We'll share those links afterwards. Just quick introductions. It's a small group today chatting about this topic. It's myself. I'm the Regional Chief Technology Officer for Integrity 360. And I'll let my colleague, Kalyn Sachs, do a quick intro for on his side.
Thanks, Martin. So I don't know exactly how to frame the intro things. Every time we do these, I feel like my title matters less than the work items that have been thrown my way. But I'm the Regional Technical Director for Managed Services, specifically the threat intelligence side. And I think we've actually got a rather interesting session coming up for today. I don't know if we're going to be able to stick to script too much. On this particular one, I have a feeling that as we go, and maybe based on some of the questions that come through, we can steer the conversation kind of how the wind sails.
I think that's what keeps these interesting. So I prefer to do it that way, Kaelin. Right. I guess you got an interesting quote there. We're not losing to better resourced adversaries, just better organized ones. What was your thought when you had that quote on starting this slide deck out?
Well, I think we've recently relaunched our threat intelligence portfolio. And I think off the back of those, we've done quite a couple of webinars already. I think Keegan did some into organized crime. We've had quite a couple in this kind of genre. And I think a really big ticket theme from all of these sessions so far has been that there's been this gap, right? From a cyber intelligence perspective. And there's this gap between, all the many feeds that we're consuming in the SOC, what we're paying for, the things that cost lots of money. And we spend all the money, there's this big investment into those feeds. But I think the real question is, how do we actually get value out of them? Especially, I guess, when you combine your two largest expense items, which are going to be staffing, threat intelligence, AI, and then your MDR platform at the end, how do we start to realize those operational benefits from the TI that we're spending money on? And I think if we start talking about the different types of threat intelligence that we've got, it becomes increasingly more difficult to figure out how do we integrate all of these different types of TI into our SOC. And I guess not just into our SOC, but into our MDR platform, because a lot of the time we tend to build our stack around either SIEM or MDR, XDR, whatever your flavor is there. And how do we turn that detection alarm into something that turns into a win for us, as opposed to just presenting the defender's dilemma, which is, we just kind of give adversaries another opportunity to see if they can get through next time. I think, Martha, maybe we venture straight into the meat and potatoes of the presentation,
Yeah,
and we kick off
100%.
with a what is Thread Intel kind of intro. I guess we have to
Yeah,
venture
I've
that way, right?
yeah, no, I think that's an important part for specifically for me to cover that we cover in this presentation or in this webinar, because I'm seeing a lot of different questions coming through. There's a lot of misunderstandings around what threat intelligence is, so we're going to start with the basics and cover everything. I think that's a good base to build off of.
Yeah, let's venture straight in there. So, I mean, this particular slide here looks pretty straightforward. I think a lot of it is self-explanatory, right? But we sometimes blur the lines between what is data, and those are your threat feed kind of things, down to what is information and what actually constitutes threat intelligence, right? And I really like that there's a NIST definition, which I'm trying to remember off the top of my head here, but I think it's that threat intelligence is information that's been aggregated, interpreted, analyzed, enriched, massaged in some shape or form to support decision making, right? And I think that's the important part of that entire sentence there is that, you know, we've got data to start with, we've done something with it, and its entire purpose is to support decision making. So, I mean, if it can't change the outcome of the decisions we're making, then it's not really threat intelligence, right? It's just, you know, yet another feed coming into our SOC. And so we have to look at it through that lens. You know, if there's something that we want to achieve out of our threat, or we want to gain from threat intelligence in our SOC, it's really how do we do something with what we have drive our decision making, and hopefully we act on that decision making at the end there. But you know, how do we use it to drive the decision making process that we've got there? So I think if I talk through the slide here and we use this as an example, you know, we've got the typical data, which is your TTP, or not TTPs, your IOCs, hashes, IP address, URL, log events, that kind of stuff that we typically get in our thread feeds. If we take an IP address on its own, you know, a lot of the time we buy those feeds and we say, look, we've got great thread intel in our SOC, it does amazing things. But actually, all it does on alert fires and someone goes, oh, someone tried to access this URL. It was blocked. Close alert, right? And that's really the limit of the value of data. It supports a blocking function. I'm not sure, you probably know this one when we look at block statistics on the firewalls or your egress ingress points. I mean, there's millions of events per day, right? And that's all actions that are taken from data, not from intelligence, from data. Machines are pretty good at using data. Humans are absolutely rubbish at it. We just can't process that kind of volume of data. But let's take that same IP address now, and we kind of add some context to that, right? So we add a little bit of context, we look at it and we go, okay, well, this IP address has been known to be doing phishing campaigns, targeting financial sector customers. I think once we see that as a bit of information, we can then immediately start to see the value that if we're not financial services, we probably don't need to worry about this, despite the fact that they may accidentally target us thinking we're financial services, just so by the way. But already we've got some information we can work with here, right? Is that that particular IP address is probably not going to be the biggest concern if we're not in financial services, right? But once we start taking that context, that relevance of our stack, and we start making that on top of the information, then we have threat intelligence, right? So we need to be able to take that bit of information and go, yeah, well, maybe we are a financial services organization, so maybe we need to pay some special attention to this. We need to look at everything that's come through our mail gateways, because sometimes, we these particular things get past the various tech. It may be pretty new. And maybe we find out, hey, listen, we've actually seen a phishing email with this IP address as a link in the email, and that's come through and landed in our finance team mailbox. Now we've got intelligence because we're able to drive some action from that, right? We can figure out, okay, well, who's accessed the link? What do we need to do? What do we need to block? What logs do we need to check? What additional info do we need to gather? How do we terminate sessions or access, based on the additional information, which then becomes further intelligence on its own, right? Every time we collect a little nugget from logs or from systems, what we're actually doing is building on this intelligence picture, and driving further actions as we go. So until we're able to take that data point, turn it into information, and then add some context, and analytics, which relates to our environment, actually, all we have is a really good threat feed that computers are good at. I mean, that's not mince words. Computers are good at processing those. But until we're able to get to that last phase in the journey, I don't think we've got threat intelligence, right? So that needs to be a key point that we focus on for the rest of the session, is that unless it drives decision making, changes the outcome of something you're doing, it's not intelligence.
Yeah, I like the way you described that. And as you were describing it, it almost made me look at the block on the left, the data box. It kind of put it in perspective for me as that's kind of the old signatures from antivirus, and we get to the right side, and that's kind of the EDR behavioral type stuff. So just again, an evolution of how we're dealing with these bits of information. So yeah, great slide.
Think onto the different types of threat intel, because I think there are a lot of them. Maybe we kick off with the executive kind of TI. This is the one that I think is the most overlooked, and I'll spend like a couple of hours actually talking on this particular component on its own. But at a strategic level, the value of threat intelligence is oftentimes overlooked, right? We tend to think like, okay, these are just like additional board packs, and they keep the executive team happy. But I think the way I like to describe this one is, when you look at strategic threat intel, I like to describe it like a little bit of a weather forecast, and a climate forecast, actually, right? Because both of those are moving targets. But that strategic bit of threat intel needs to tell you, what does our climate look like? How much rain do we usually get? How much rain is coming tomorrow? How cold is it going to be? Because ultimately, what that does, it drives the decision making at the end, which is, should I buy a jacket, or should I bring a jacket? There are so many times when you talk to customers, when I talk to customers, you would have seen this one as well, as you talk to them, they say, listen, it's fantastic, this is great, but actually, the executive team won't give us budget for this one, right? And you start to find all of the gap, in security operations, where teams just don't have the budget or the buy-in from executive teams. And that's because we tend to be traditionally pretty poop at, saying like, okay, what do we need to focus our attention on here, right? So if you look at some of the strategic TI reports that I've seen, the guys use a lot of imaginary stats, that they're not real. They're kind of like the jokes on certain TV shows. I don't know whether they have real impact at a board level, because they say, well, the average ransomware attack costs organizations $10 million. But when your organization is a small manufacturing business with no online presence, the real question is, is this going to cost me $10 million? Because I don't think so. I don't have an online presence. Is ransomware even real for me and my stack? And yet, when you switch that up a little bit, you start looking at, well, how many ransomware attacks were there last month that target manufacturing companies? How many alarms triggered on our email gateway for ransomware? How many of those alarms then made it through the email gateways or your ingress gateways and were caught by AV EDR on endpoint? How much money will we lose if PLC number 7 goes offline for 24 hours, which is what it's going to take us to restore data from backup or 7 days, because that's how long it takes for them to typically investigate an incident. And the minute you start being able to distill those facts kind of through the big funnel to be relevant to you, then you're talking about like really useful TI, something that's board relevant, that's going to actually drive the funding you get, the where you focus your attention in the organization. What are the items you really need to be concerned about, as opposed to being a small manufacturing business that's spending heaps and heaps and heaps of tech money on tech that you don't actually use in your stack? I don't know if you've got some similar stories on that strategic side that you want to bring in here.
Well, yeah, it just got me thinking around how closely that's tied with threat modeling. Threat intelligence at that level is really tying in nicely with threat modeling. And so yes, the threat intelligence is one part, but once you tie that into your threat modeling, then you really start understanding the big risks to your business, and it brings the big story together, and again, very strategic, and allows you to put the bigger long-term goals together for the organization to understand what's really at like the example you used, what really is the risk, and where would the impact be if something were to happen. So yeah, something that obviously like you the correct audience there is the executives and making the big decisions, and that's really where you get the buy-in for the value of threat intelligence as a whole.
I think also it makes a big difference if the people steering the ship understand that the capabilities of the ship, the weaknesses, the state of the sea, what are the concerns we need to we need to keep front of mind there. I think the other two items are a lot more familiar in many terms, but when you get to operational threat intel, that tends to be your TTPs, well, not really TTPs, but more information about adversaries. These are really nice threat mining functions that are available in a lot of commercial tooling. So these are things like, once you do get an alarm and there's a particular adversary that that's targeting you, you can then look at, what is this adversary exploiting right now? What are the key risks in our sector, in our region? This is for your SOC teams, your IR teams, your threat hunting teams. These are the day-to-day operational bits of information that the team will consume for the purposes of deciding where you spend immediate effort. Is this alarm that fired in my stack really worth all of my attention? But when I say alarm, I mean the 40 bleed kind of events. These are, hey, you've got a major situation, new vulns, new items in your landscape. What do we need to change in terms of how you assign SOC resources, how you assign project budget, that kind of thing. And then I'll maybe finish off with the tactical bit. The tactical threat intel is the TTPs. These are the tools, techniques, procedures. You know, hey, I've got hands-on keyboard in my environment right now. It's ransomware. What do I need to consider? You know, do we need to consider the double extortion? What systems do they typically access? How long do they give us before they release our data on the dark web? These are a lot of the indicators of compromise and indicators of attack that sometimes fall in here. I think they're more commonly referred to as technical threat intel, but you know, we kind of bundle them into that tactical category. But this is the kind of stuff that you need access to right now in your SOC to do your day-to-day IR type services. And I think there's some really nice, actually some really nice stuff that we've got in terms of honeypots within CyberFire that we use to drive a lot of these decisioning processes. But maybe I'll pass that one on to you, and you can kind of give us some background there.
Yeah, I think generally when you think honeypots, you don't necessarily think threat intelligence, but they are actually a great source. And so that's one of the reasons why we've expanded quite a lot on our use of honeypots within the CyberFire service, from physical servers or what appear to be servers to accounts scattered throughout your systems that are essentially trigger points, and they give us insight into anyone that's fiddling where they shouldn't fiddle. You know, that's a great sign that actually you need to start looking at that. That's not normal activity, and actually a very good source for threat intelligence. I
Think
think we had
maybe,
a
yeah,
poll.
I
Are
was
we going
just
to
gonna
fire up
say,
the
I think we
poll?
forgot
Yeah.
the
Okay. Well, I think we're going to put a poll up now, just to get some insights from the audience. What do you want out of threat intelligence? And we kind of put a quite a span of different answers in there, depending on where you are. And I think this is a people talk about threat intelligence in the security industry all the time, but if you're running a business, it's not necessarily something that you might know what you need to do with. So it's important that we understand what the audience is wanting to do. So we've got a couple of answers now. I'm going to wait for a few more, and then we'll.
I think the thing I really like about this particular poll is that there aren't really wrong answers. Okay, maybe you may still be pretty early on in your journey, but there aren't really wrong answers to these questions. You know, we can distribute kind of across the board and say, well, every business has different strengths and weaknesses, right? So you've got to be able to you've got to be able to take the right direction, well, to cover your weaknesses. You know, so if you've got a really strong IR team that's able to derive threat intel on the fly, then you know the kind of TI that you need is very different from someone who's got maybe a managed stack.
All right, I'm going to end this poll. There we go.
So that's an interesting spread of results.
Yeah.
Maybe you wanna take that one. What do you think?
Well, I like the fact, not I like the fact, but it's interesting that not sure yet. I think that's why we had this webinar, just to give some more insight into what threat intelligence is. So that's a good sign. Again, looking for strategic direction, that's I think an important thing that we should be wanting to get out of threat intelligence. I think a lot of organizations, threat intelligence can be quite a big topic to undertake. And in some cases, it makes sense to outsource what you do, not necessarily the strategic part, but certainly the operational bit and some of the vendors should be coming to the party and making sure that you're getting the most out of specifically their products and threat intelligence. But we're going to dig into that a little bit more. So yeah, some interesting results there.
Yeah, I like the fact that there's a lot of focus on that executive tier, because that's the one in my experience doesn't get enough attention. I've seen the threat intel that a lot of guys produce at that executive tier, and I don't think that the guys have the right kind of info in front of them to make these decisions. They're difficult decisions. S security tech's not cheap, so we've got to figure out how do we get the right kind of information to your board level, especially?
All right, cool. Just moving on from your description of the tactical, I think it's I'll put the next slide in just to talk a little bit about the pyramid of pain and how it ties in with the different types of threatened intelligence that we've been talking about. Most people might know the pyramid of pain. It's been around for years. Basically, if you think back to the first slide that Kaelin had up about the hashes and the IP addresses on the left-hand side, that's just data, and that's what we kind of call IOC threat feeds. And then as we go up the pyramid, we start talking about techniques and tactics that the threat actors are using, and really that's the kind of stuff that we want to be tracking. So I'm just kind of tying that to the pyramid of pain, and how it's generally more difficult to get to the top of to identify the top of the pyramid, but it's more focused and it's allows you to get better coverage, right? So it's the normal thing that an IP address and attacker, and this is why IOC threat feeds, I get the question quite often from customers, what threat feeds are you using in your MDR service? Well, those IP addresses get changed literally on an hourly
Daily.
basis. So they're kind of useless to us, because if they're used in one attack, it could be that they're used in the morning and then in the afternoon they're useless, and they get reprovisioned for legitimate services. And it just creates more noise than everything than anything else. So we don't really like to focus on threat feeds, specifically at the bottom tier of the pyramid. Now, they can be useful when we start looking at attacks that we see, but when you start consuming threat feeds from even commercial providers, there's open source feeds and there's commercial feeds. By the time those feeds are processed, they become pretty redundant. Specifically, again, those hash values. So easy to change a hash, IP addresses, even domain names. So yeah, just I wanted to put that link together in terms of how threat intel and threat feeds correlate to the pyramid of pain. I thought that was an interesting connection.
I think it's quite useful to put this up, just because a lot of the time, we tend to think of threat intelligence as a product, but actually it's more of a capability within your stack. And there's so many different ways you can take those bottom of the pyramid of pain items and start moving them up the stack, right? I mean, we've got an entire detection engineering team in CyberFire that looks through this on a day-to-day basis. And a really good example is like malware, malware fires, and we tend to get a hash and think, oh, okay, cool. You block the hash, you've stopped the malware. But I think we know that from the 90s, that stopped being effective pretty much. But the minute you start looking at, what is the domain generation algorithms that are used in a particular malware family, well then, if you see something communicating to these domains, you kind of burn the whole stack down. On the TTP side, there's a couple of things that ransomware needs to do. So I think there's really good alerts like volume shadow copy deletion. EDRs tend to burn those immediately, but Malware has to be able to do certain things to fulfill its ultimate goal, and ransomware is no different. You've got to be able to, you've got to be able to read all the files in the system. You've got to be able to fetch encryption keys from your phone home server. You've got to be able to start encrypting and deleting data. You've got to be able to ship off data that you've encrypted. You may even do like backdoors and other kinds of things. But I mean, if you've got a really good threat intelligence capability, not fee, but capability that you can rely on, you can take those bottom of the pyramid of pain items and start moving them to the top, and then make it really difficult for adversaries to get anything useful in your stack.
All right, let's move on to the next slide there.
Yeah, I think I mean that there's lots on this particular slide here, but I think the key benefit of threat intelligence really is improving situational awareness and bumping up your cyber resilience, right? Good threat intelligence improves how you're able to handle the alarms that go off. All SOC teams have various alerts that go off on a day-to-day basis, but what you do with those, that's what really differentiates good incident response from less than good incident response. It turns that defender's dilemma into the attacker's dilemma, where an attacker only really needs to be caught once to have his entire infrastructure stack burned to the ground. And if we start being able to switch that around, to create the attacker's dilemma, then you really get to see the benefit of threat intel. Things like the executive deep fakes that we're seeing when people do these change of banking detail scams or payment voucher scams. Those deep fake videos, we can either detect them and be really good at it, which is really difficult because those tend to happen on people's personal devices, right? So you have someone who gets a WhatsApp call with a deep fake from an executive, and they say, "Listen, we're just want to let you know we've changed our banking details. I'm about to get in a flight. Here's some info. Just make sure our next payments go here." And those are very difficult to catch because there's nothing that as an organization you control on the person's personal phone, especially when it's a WhatsApp call, right? And when these deepfakes start getting as good as they are at the moment, it's sometimes really good or really difficult to be able to pick out what has gone wrong. Like what is fake versus what is real. And I think if you do pick up even one, and you could start burning it. Well, look, we've got this deep fake. It's landed. We've picked up the one, and then you start burning down adversary infrastructure. You run your threat intelligence. You look at the phone numbers that WhatsApp call came from. You look at the people they cloned. You get some organizational awareness of that this kind of thing is happening. You can contact suppliers who may not have as good an awareness program as you have. And sometimes we like to look at it and go, "Oh, well, that's a them problem. We keep our house clean. They must keep their house clean." But it's terrible when you've built a business around a supply chain, and one of your suppliers disappear from the map because they've been scammed out of something, and they didn't know that particular scam was running. They disappear from business operations because they can't take the hit, and then what do you do from a recovery perspective? How quickly are you going to be able to get operations up and running again? How quickly are you going to be able to find a replacement supplier at that price point, or who gives you the service that you got from your previous supplier? How do you quickly fill those up to be able to recover from those? So I think, I mean, there's lots of words on this slide, but I think guys can read them in there. In the PDF we'll probably distribute after this one. But I think the short answer is, threat intelligence needs to be able to improve your situational awareness when something happens, and it needs to drive some action where you can turn that defender's dilemma into the attacker's dilemma.
Yeah, I think that's a great sum up of the slide, and it ties into the next slide quite well. For me, it's what you said earlier. Threat intelligence is not a product that you buy. It's how you kind of use that information within the business to get actionable results, right? So I think moving on to the next slide, we're talking about at the tactical operational level within CyberFire. And again, this is how we do it in CyberFire, but it's not like we're doing it different from best practice. I think it's just sometimes it can be difficult to implement this in an organization that's segmented, or there's different teams working. I think that getting the different teams to work together is the tricky part. And I'll just run through some of these examples about how some of this threat intelligence works and creates actionable intelligence for us. So obviously we're investigating alerts on a daily basis. That's what we do in the MDR service. But actually, if you start putting that together and you start seeing active campaigns and active patterns, then you start making use of the threat intelligence that you gain there. And this is not a feed that you can subscribe to because it's happening in real time, right? So again, these feeds are sometimes old, but if you have 100 or whatever X amount of customers, and you start seeing the same phishing mails coming across several of them, or if you see a phishing campaign for the first time identified, then you go look at your other customers to see if they've been hit with the same phishing attack, and maybe their mail gateway didn't stop it because it was so fresh, right? That's how you're actually using the threat intelligence. Sure, you can just close the alert or investigate it and stop the phishing mail, but you want to be proactive about it and look in areas where you wouldn't typically look just by reacting to a fired alert. And I guess seeing that activity on the ground in the telemetry that you're looking at is one thing. This little circle diagram on the right is actually from our detection engineering team. So if you're looking at those incidents in real time, those alerts in real time, and you're identifying those patterns, that's one thing. But you also need to do research, right? So a big part of threat intelligence is research, but particularly at the tactical and operational level. So you only see a subset of attacks within within what you're monitoring, and you need to think broader than that. And obviously, there's such a wealth of information out there, and to have teams that are actively looking at that information and building detection from that. So really, that threat re research and that incident analysis are the two things that help you build your detectors, right? And there's one little section in there that's, well, it's not in here because it's not part of the detection engineering loop, but actually, what often happens from the threat research is we'll build threat hunts, right? So a threat hunt is maybe some research, and the analyst or the detection engineer investigates, and he sees that, okay, this is a new kind of technique that the threat actors are using. Let me go see if I can find that in the information that we have. And by identifying that, that's kind of the first stage of developing the detector, which is the automated way of alerting on that. So it's just kind of a natural progression of, yes, we do this threat research, or we've seen an incident like this. Let's see if it actually exists in other customers, and what variations we're seeing. And then the outcome of that is writing a rule, right? And this is really proactive because it means that we don't have to wait for a vendor to release a rule set for us. We can do this in real time as we're seeing this. And in many cases, another example of threat intelligence in the real life here is for some reason, 0 days get announced on a Friday afternoon at 6 p.m. And it gets everyone into a panic. But just if we look at, for instance, firewall activity, let's say there's a 0 day on a FortiGate firewall happens.
Never seen it, sorry, can't comment.
And it's on a on the admin port, and it gets released on a Friday. Immediately, we'll start seeing traffic ramp up on that port with threat actors starting to scan and look for that. And you can see it across the board. And now you have some intelligence that says, okay, this is now obviously, there's a potential vulnerability out there that's being exploited. We're seeing the scanning. We need to react to that, notify customers. They need to put some mitigation in place. And really, that's how seeing those attacks in real life, and again, this talks to the tactical area where it's quick. It's happening now, and it happens all the time, right? So you have to react to it very, very quickly. And really, it helps you with continuous improvement and not necessarily relying on whatever vendor you may have to develop rule sets, which inevitably takes, it's the old signature scenario where virus signatures, oh, we have to deploy the latest virus signatures to get this protection. The threat actors are moving too quick. They're changing too quick. You don't have time for that. So the quicker you can move this into your detection stack, the better off you are. And of course, the detector maintenance is kind of just a continuous improvement. Sometimes the detection methods are obsolete or threat actors aren't using it. And obviously it takes CPU cycles, so you don't want to necessarily spend time looking for that. So yeah, this is just a quick kind of insight into how we do things with in kind of threat intelligence, because as I mentioned earlier, we get the question about what threat feeds are you subscribed to in the SOC? Well, if I describe what we're doing here, that's not really something you get from a feed. You don't get a feed that tells you this. Besides, actually, the good feeds are Telegram and Twitter and some other social media platforms where the blue teamers are talking about things. Those are things that you don't really subscribe to. It's a practice that you enable in your SOC to make sure that you get that information and you act on it quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually while you were talking about that story you had on the derived threat intel, I actually thought of a really funny story from way back when I was still working for one of the banks. We didn't know we had a red team running, but we found an alert that had come through, and we were just trolling through history to figure out. Listen, this particular email structure looks suspect. It's definitely made it through our mail gateway. We just want to look through, has anything like this appeared in prior weeks, targeting users? And while we were looking through the alerts, we actually found that the company that was running the red team for us had sent through some emails a couple of weeks prior to that. They were just testing and probing, which emails bypass and that kind of thing. And so we actually managed to find from one of the earlier payloads that wasn't so well obfuscated. We actually managed to find some of the tech that they had put up for testing. So we pulled the IP from the mail server that had sent it to us, and we traced that down to the red team company that was using our services, and we started reporting everything. And a couple of hours post us starting our incident response activity, we actually got a phone call from them to say, "Listen, you guys really need to start withdrawing your complaints because our ISP just phoned us and is threatening to pull our internet access to the office." And it was just such a hell of a funny exercise to be able to, like I said, just take that defender's dilemma and turn it into the attacker's dilemma, where, suddenly our red teaming company weren't going to have internet at their office if we didn't withdraw our complaints. Which we argued unsuccessfully that, listen, we're trying to simulate a real red team, so we should be allowed to continue. We fight back here. But nah, the procurement said no. The CISO said no. And so we were like, okay, we have to back off, you know. But it just shows the power of threat intel, the ability to derive your own threat intel in the SOC, and then to be able to build actionable items from that one, I think is really important.
Cool. I'm gonna jump on to the next slide. We're gonna kind of close off here. We got a couple of questions. If you do have any other questions, feel free to pop them into the Q&A, and we'll get to them. We still have a bit of time to finish up. But I think we were gonna end off with this slide just to talk about what you should be doing, right? And it all depends on. It depends on where you are in terms of your cybersecurity maturity. You certainly shouldn't try to run before you're walking. So these answers won't be the same for everyone, but I think these are just giving you things to think about. And I think on my first point, I'll take the first point here. Lean on your partners and suppliers. Like, threat intelligence can be quite an elephant to chew, right? So one bite at a time, and in many cases your partners should be helping you with this. The vendors that you're engaging with, they should all, any mature cybersecurity business should be able to tell you about their threat intelligence and how they're using it. And it's not going to solve all your problems, but if you understand how that's being used, that's certainly something that's the right step, and it can get some low-hanging fruit from you. It can grab some low-hanging fruits in terms of threat intelligence to at least know that you're doing something about it. It doesn't have to be in-house. It could be your partners and suppliers.
Yeah, I
Any
was actually just looking off screen to some of the questions that we've gotten, and I think that one may be answered quite nicely there, because one of the questions was, how do I ask, or what should I ask vendor X to ensure they've got a mature TI practice? And I think it was answered quite nicely there. Is you need to be able to ask your vendors, how are they integrating threat intelligence into the platform? Not just what feeds are they consuming in the platform, but how's threat intelligence baked into their platform, and how can it be customized to make it relevant for your environment, right? What are you doing in my stack that makes my security better?
100%. Comments on the next point, Kayla?
Yeah, I think in integrations, not sources. I think that's a really nice one, because very often, we buy the feeds and we plonk them into our egress points or technology stack, and we high five because the lights are green in the server room, so that means everything's working. But having that ability just sometimes for your SOC team to be able to say, well, this alarm has fired. Why did it fire? Where does it come from? Even what feed did it come from is sometimes even useful information, because if it came from a spam house feed, for example, that tells you something about the nature of this alarm that's just gone off, why this email was blocked, because it's spam, or because it's malware, or because it's from ransomware.live. Well, I mean, so many different open source feeds you can mention here. But I mean, even just knowing the source of that intel sometimes makes such a big difference for your SOC team's ability to respond to that event, I think
On the
maybe
next one, sorry, go ahead, Ken.
I was going to say maybe I take the next one as well, because I think they're mostly the same. But integrating that dark web kind of stack and your shadow broker marketplaces, the amount of times that you see credential leaks, shadow broker access type scenarios, all of these being either mentioned or sold on dark web marketplaces or dark web forums. And for anybody who has had an incident, I first want to say I'm really sorry. It sucks. It's terrible. But when you bring in the intel, the investigative guys, and they do their post-incident investigation, oftentimes you've got tons of emails from people who come through and say, yeah, we saw this on the dark web 2 weeks before the breach happened, that someone was selling your data somewhere. So, great if you told me 2 weeks before the breach, don't tell me afterward. I hate the ambulance chasing that comes with data breaches. But I think it's important to be proactively monitoring those forces.
I think just a point on that is that, threat intelligence on the dark web used to be prohibitively expensive and out of reach for most organizations. Things have really changed. Again, this is not something you want to try to do in-house. There's quite a lot of expertise around it. But certainly the cost to outsourcing this and getting insight into that has become a lot more affordable, and certainly value. We're seeing value from that. Just looking for we've got a identity leak detection module within CyberFire, and seeing leak credentials happen with customers, it's just surprising how often it happens. And that's kind of insight that you wouldn't normally get, or that you would have had to pay exorbitant amounts of money for previously. That's just an add-on module for CyberFire, which makes it quite easy to achieve. I think the next one speaks to your strategic, I think it was the third slide you spoke about getting executive buy-in, super important. Is there any kind of tips that you can give there, Kevin?
I think it's just important to start measuring outcomes, I think events per day and alerts per day, events per second, those are all kind of mood stats. We need to start talking about losses prevented, incidents prevented, lateral movement detections. Listen, an alarm did go off because someone was attempting lateral movement somewhere, but it was contained to one host as opposed to the fact that the user who was logged into that host having access to, these 50 servers could have actually altered our entire environment. But because it was a SOC team who were able to respond so effectively, damage was limited to someone's laptop as opposed to everything in the data center,
Yeah, I just want to make sure we get to some of these questions. So I'll touch on the last one as well, threat briefing session. So again, back to the strategic point that Kaelin pointed out, sometimes the executives want to understand what the threat landscape looks out there, region specific, industry specific. Threat briefing sessions are great for that. You get quite deep insights. And again, it's not necessary that you have to buy a product. You can just ask for a briefing session on your industry. And it's very interesting for execs to kind of see if there's been other attacks or campaigns against the industry or in the region. It kind of you don't always read about these in the news, so it sometimes makes them realize the importance of investing in threat intelligence. Cool. I think you happy to jump into some of the questions, Kaelin?
I think for the questions that we can't answer during the session, we'll post those afterward. But if anybody does have questions, feel free to keep posting.
Yeah, we got four questions here, so I think we should be able to get through them. Well, actually, we got 4 minutes. Let's see. I think we answered one already, but the first one is the ultimate goal of threat intelligence: better reporting or better detections? It's a bit of both, eh?
Yeah, no, I think it's a bit of both, but you have to realize that there are different types of threat intelligence, right? And it's the point of having better TI is to do better detection, better response, better recovery, better protection, and then to get your executive buy-in. So it's across the board there. You've got to use it as much as you can. You pay for it.
Yeah,
It's a
so I
money's
would
worth.
think I would sum it up and say definitely reporting at the strategic level, and at the tactical level, better detection. Maybe that's a good way to sum it up. We spoke about what to ask your vendor to make sure that they're doing something with threat intelligence and that they have a mature practice. You know what? Just ask them questions about how they're doing, how they're manipulating their threat intelligence, how they're using it. These aren't difficult questions for them. They should be able to answer that. Don't ask them what feed they're running because that's not always going to give you good insight. They might be paying for the best feed, but if they're not doing anything with the feed, then it's not really helping. I guess the next one, I'm going to bounce your way. I have my own view on it. How do you identify and track threat actor activity targeting your sector? I think I've always been, I don't place much importance on attribution, but I guess there is some attribution, meaning, saying this threat actor is targeting us. What's your thoughts on that, Kevin?
I think this one here is the one item you definitely can't do yourself, right? There's so much specialized tooling, tech capabilities out there. It's just too costly to try to replicate that internally. But the point of this one is, engage with any of your TI providers and ask them to actually run these briefing sessions for you because it's not something that you're going to be able to replicate in any SOC that doesn't have dedicated focus on this particular item. So I would actually kick that one to the curb and say that's not one that you do internally.
That's running, that's not walking. So you gotta be pretty mature to want to understand what threat actor is after you. Yeah, agreed. Last question. Do teams need all three types of threat intelligence, or should a smaller SOC just focus on one or two?
I think I'll maybe take that one. I think all the different types of threat intelligence serve different purposes. They target different tiers in your stack. But while it's true that you need all three, not all three need equal priority, right? So some of them are going to need more focus than others, depending on your sector, depending on where you guys are struggling, what it is that you guys need to do in your environment. So the question is, yes, you definitely need all three, but to what extent you need all three will vary based on the business.
Yeah, and I would almost say that if we're talking about the security operations center in particular, certainly the tactical and operational threat intelligence is more important. And the strategic intelligence is better suited to the executive. So yeah, I agree with you. You need all three, but if we're talking about the SOC specifically, the tactical stuff is much more important. Again, it's about priority. Cool. I hope we answer those questions well for everyone. That brings us just to the hour. So thank you everyone for joining us. We will be putting up this recording onto the website. If you have any other questions, there's a mail address there, marketing@integrity360. Keep an eye out for any of the other webinars that are coming out. We've got lots of interesting content coming your way. Yeah, thanks again. Have a good evening. Cheers.
Yes, guys.